welcome to Trinity Tim's. I think I signed off last week saying that us three miserable buggers will be back again next Monday. And lo and behold, us three miserable buggers are here. So, I'm Joe McHugh from Video Celts, ably assisted by Eric from Reed Celtic and James from the Celtic. I was reminiscing today, a few text messages, and 4 months ago today, almost, we just lost to a team from Edinburgh, and we did Glasgow Derby coming up the weekend. The Celtic world got turned upside down later on that day, and we called the other podcasters, it like the Monday night slot, Monday, October the 27th, the Celtic world changed. First of all, right at 9:30, we got Brendan Rodgers resigning. 20 minutes later, we get a message from one of our most significant, definitely the most significant, but the majority shareholder, Dermot Desmond, reassuring us, all is well, folks, don't worry, model, everything's working fantastic. We're undermined by one man, and we'll soon be back to show. 4 months down the line, there is nothing better about Celtic, and after that, we beat at Tynecastle. We did have a League Cup semi-final victory to enjoy at Hampden. A week later, as Martin O'Neill worked his magic. So, 4 months on, we're going to rely on Martin O'Neill working some incredible magic. The next fortnight looks pivotal. That's a diplomatic way of putting it. So, in between Martin's stints, we did a full course of Wilfred Nancy, and he took us to 4 successive defeats. Well, we had 2 back-to-back home defeats. We're away at Stuttgart. We're away at Ibrox, we're away at Pittodrie, we're away at Ibrox. So it's not looking great, but the league table might tell you otherwise. If we win all our remaining games, we will be champions. After losing 7 out of 27, it's a hell of a tall order. And anyone that's been watching the team recently will have very little faith in that, other than the faithful flowing through Celtic mantra. So, first of all, I'll pass to Eric. Eric seemed exceptionally depressed last night, switching off, just disengaging. But hey, you can't disengage from Celtic. It's almost the first thing you think about in the morning. It's hard to escape. So if you're in Glasgow or Kerry or elsewhere, it doesn't take long for the problems that Celtic come through. So, Eric, how deep was the disappointment yesterday? Have things picked up in any way? And is it realistic to expect miracles from Martin O'Neill over the next fortnight to keep Celtic season alive?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was pretty depressed after the game yesterday. I think what depressed me even more was the fact that the Ibrox side messed up so badly in their game against Livingston and that we weren't in a position to be able to take advantage of that. So I got home from the game yesterday evening and I was just like, I didn't want to think about Celtic anymore. I've just seen over the last few weeks, I've just seen so much negativity. It got to me yesterday and I just put the phone away and switched off for the evening. But as you say, you can't do that being a Celtic fan, being as heavily involved and heavily invested in Celtic as we are and writing as much as we do about Celtic. You can't just switch off. I mean, I was up at 6:30 this morning and at it again this morning and I wrote an article where I basically said, you know, I was trying to be pragmatic about it. I basically said the biggest thing that's costing us in games like this and in the last 3 games is a lack of goals. It's that simple. We just have 3 strikers on the books at the moment who cannot score goals. They can't buy a goal. And that's what's hurting us. We can't keep relying on Benjamin Negrin to be our source of goals. He had, up until the sending off, I suppose he had a decent enough game yesterday. He was fairly active in and around the box and he was creating plenty of chances. He was a little more active than he usually is. He got his goal and that was a good diving header from him. But we just don't have that penetration up top. Thomas Svanjara is turning out to be a complete non-entity. He got 1 goal so far. He looked okay. He set up the goal for Araujo last, or, you know, in the game against Kilmarnock. But at the end of the day, he just doesn't seem to be able to get the ball into the back of the net when we need him to. He had a couple of chances daring misses there yesterday, and that was, you know, that cost us as well. But we said, and we've kept saying it time and time again, that we couldn't keep riding our luck in the way that we had in the previous three games, and that eventually that was going to catch up with us. And it caught up with us yesterday, big style. With regard to the Dusty sending off, I felt it was harsh, but unfortunately it was warranted, because the force that he used to smack away Jamie McGrath's hand was just, that was going to land him in trouble. There was no way he was going to get away with that. McGrath made a meal of it and totally milked it and got what he wanted out of it. He got the player sent off. In some cases like that, I just think that's poor gamesmanship. This sort of thing where players are holding on to players in the box during corners is becoming more and more prevalent this season. Jersey pulling, all that kind of stuff. And referees should be, at this point in time, especially after what's been happening of late, adopt a zero tolerance for this. That if guys are hanging on to fellas' jerseys, they should be just carded in the box, I think, at this point, because it's getting ridiculous. And I think that was what forced the reaction from Trusty yesterday. But in hindsight, he probably deserved to be sent off because he was just too forceful in the way that he hit the grandstand away. But, I mean, if you look at that and you put that alongside the incident against Motherwell, you know, between Motherwell and St Mirren on Saturday evening in Paisley, and the sending off of Richard King, I mean, that was, in comparison, absolutely farcical. And Callum Slattery of Motherwell should have been done for simulation in that. And I do not understand how Motherwell, or how the VAR that game did not review that until the referee to book Slattery for simulation, because Richard King didn't make contact with his face. He was nowhere near his face. And again, that was an incident where he was being tugged. It was hard to tell whether it was jersey or his arm was being tugged, but he was being tugged and he pulled away from Slattery. His momentum carried it around. He waved his arm in front of his face. He didn't hit him, and he got a fucking red card for it. Like, it was, it's, that's just part. We'll probably touch on that later, but some of the refereeing decisions over the weekend were appalling. They were absolutely fucking appalling. So for me, it's a bitter pill to swallow, especially because we could have been in a very good position had we won that game yesterday. It would have closed the gap to Hearts to 3 points. The Ibrox side lost more momentum and more ground with their draw. And I don't think it's detrimental to our title aspirations. But if we don't start scoring goals, we're in serious trouble. And we need, somebody has to find, you know, somebody out of those three strikers has to find a scoring touch. Martin O'Neill has to pull a scoring touch out of them somehow. If they want to shine, ultimately the next game, whether it be Svanchara, Hinacho, or Junior Adamo, yeah, they have to shine in the next game. It's the perfect opportunity. And I need to apologize to all our viewers, because I don't know why all of our stuff has turned blue. Nobody changed anything on our settings. So we've obviously been, there's a bug in the system. I don't know why this is happening. So we're going to have to get onto StreamYard and give out shit to them. Why have you turned all our names blue? But there's an Ibrox mole in the system, I think. But otherwise, we'll have to get on with it. We can't change it midstream now anyway, but it has been noted, guys. You don't need to keep talking about it. But yes, we the chickens came home to roost yesterday. Our luck ran out. It's that simple. And Motherwell, you know, once we went down to 10 men, it was always going to be a struggle. And Hibernian got their goal. I mean, there's nothing more you can say about it. It was a shit day at the office. Depressed the living shit out of me. And I can't. What's done is done. It's gone. 3 points are gone. We just have to move on. Somehow we're still hanging in there. Somehow. 7 losses this season. I don't know how we're still hanging in there, but we're hanging in there. But this time, 2 weeks, could be all over. Could be done and dusted. So you just don't know what way it's going to go. It's very hard to tell what way it's going to go in the next 2 weeks. So yeah, I'm not a glass half empty or a glass half full man today. I'm just a glass depressed man.
As I said, the league table says otherwise. The league table says Celtic are well in the hunt. As we discussed earlier, there's as good a case for Celtic finishing fourth as there is for finishing first.
Yes,
so, is there any possibility that a team that's lost seven of their first 27 league matches can suddenly... You're not asking the earth. We're not playing against fantastic opponents. The two clubs above us are very vulnerable, but we are more vulnerable. I'll try and say that properly. We are more vulnerable. We look very shaky. There's times when it looks as if we're losing two goals a game. Martin O'Neill is... The season could have been dead before now, but the next fortnight looks ominous. James, is there anything to be positive about? Is there anything to take hope into this run of four away fixtures followed up by the visit of Motherwell?
Of course there is, which feels really, really unusual to say. I mean, I'll tell you how I feel about the whole thing surrounding the club right now. I'm very interested in discussing. One of our guys in the comments said about underwear with Henrik Larsson's face on them not selling well with women. I would rather talk about that than talk about the football tonight. It's a much more interesting subject. But I guess we're here to talk about the football, and so we have to. And I came out of the game after we conceded the second goal. I left after we conceded the second goal. We could have played there for another 10 minutes, another 10 hours, another 10 days, and we wouldn't go back into that game. And I know there will be criticisms of individual players and whatnot, right? I think the team system is shit. I think that the 4-3-3 or the 4-2-3-1 or whatever the hell we're calling it this week has had its day, and I think we're far too slow, we're far too predictable. And if Martin O'Neill doesn't change it dramatically, we're going to lose huge in some game against somebody. The one area where I have some optimism is that I think that both of our title rivals are equally shit. And Hearts, to their credit, are having a better season than normal, which means that they might reach 80 points. They might reach 80 points. But it's the fall in standards from us that has made this a tight title race. Hearts are having a good season by their standards. Motherwell having a good season by theirs. I'm going to try and puzzle that one out tomorrow. I think it's got something to do with the bottom teams being worse than they've been in a long time, and the teams in the middle being really poor and having a combination of bad seasons and bad finishing and whatever, bad defenders. But there is an explanation for that. There is a way to puzzle this out. But the bottom line is that we're just shit. We're terrible. And if this Celtic team was even 5% better, and I said this morning to my old man, we don't need to be massively better to go to Ibrox and get a result. We only need to be marginally better than we are right now, because they're dreadful. This great comeback that they're allegedly in the middle of, I'm sorry, but I don't see it, and I've never seen it. And I don't understand why anybody thinks that they do see it. I'd look at their record last night. They're 28 games out of the season. They've won 15. They've drew 11. They've lost 2. This guy in the dugout right now is responsible for 5 of their draws and 1 of those defeats. He's also responsible for them being out of the League Cup. He's also solely responsible for them being out of Europe as early as they were, because he had plenty of time to turn that around, and I think in 6 European games he lost 5. This guy is not a good manager. That is not a good team. They struggled against Motherwell. Motherwell, in fact, played them off the park, and Livingston would have beaten them except for another odd refereeing decision. It is a remarkable season for how bad the top sides are. Motherwell are actually having the only exceptional, genuinely exceptional season, because I had a look at the stats tonight. Their average points tally over the last 5 years is about 40 points. They're already on 50, which is pretty remarkable for them. Their highest points tally in the last 5 years has been 52 over the course of the full season. They will easily beat that. And we'll get to their manager, I'm sure, later on. I want to discuss that, because the most dangerous myth in Scottish football today to Celtic is that the Motherwell manager should be a future Celtic boss. I'm not even going near that in this wee segment, because I would talk this subject for hours if I could. But we're terrible. I have never been less afraid of an Ibrox team than I am this one. It's 15 wins in 28 games. I am scared shitless of us. And I'm scared shitless of the kind of performance that we might put in at Ibrox and make it them look better than they are. And I'm really worried about it. I don't think they're in it in the fear. I'm more scared of what we might do. I'm really seriously scared of what we might do. We are, as Joe says, in a as much a chance as finishing fourth as we are finishing first. And I wrote a very, very scary, very horrible article about that subject today, where I talked about what the consequences are if we finish first, second, third, and fourth. And the last two scenarios, they're barely worth thinking about. And we are on the brink of both of them. I've never seen anything like it. The people running a club, they will have everything to answer for if this ends the way it looks like it could end. If we finish third, we are in a world of shit. And most fans haven't grasped how serious it's going to be. That's why I wrote about it this morning. Worst case scenarios.
You can't tease us about Askew like that. But on the first, second, third, fourth scenario, this squad, this CEO, with this minority shareholder on a golf course in the Caribbean, there is absolutely no prospect on this planet that Celtic will be in next season's Champions League. If we're in the Champions League qualifiers, we'll likely lose and fall into the Europa League. If we don't win the league, we'll either be in a Champions League qualifier or Conference League qualifiers. Things are going to go downhill regardless. There's no way. We've seen seven out of the nine attempts to get into the Champions League we've failed. But Askew, I don't think he's in an ideal world. 2 years ago, you wouldn't have wanted him, someone that had done well at Motherwell as Celtic manager. But our chief executive thought that Wilfred Nancy was the outstanding candidate in November. I've said a few times, no one competent, no one with a reputation, no one with credibility is coming in to manage Celtic and have Michael Nicholson doing your negotiations, waiting for sign-off from Dermot Desmond and other non-executive directors. So, Jim, what is your big hang-up about Askew?
It's a myth. The whole thing's a myth. It's as much a myth as the McInnes myth. But the McInnes myth is actually built on mere solid foundations, because McInnes has overachieved with Aberdeen to an extent. I mean, people talk about overachievement with Aberdeen. They didn't win a trophy with Aberdeen. I mean, the last Aberdeen manager, the one who just got sacked, won. Whatever you call him, sorry, I forget his name. He won a Scottish Cup with Aberdeen. McInnes never managed that.
McInnes won the League Cup, didn't he?
McInnes won the League Cup. That's the highest honour McInnes has won in the Scottish game. McInnes is a myth, right? But this guy's an even bigger myth, because this guy has been in Scottish football for three quarters of a season. That's his experience in Scottish football. And Motherwell having a good year, right? But Motherwell have also recruited pretty well. Motherwell, if you look at the Motherwell squad, right, I've been crunching these numbers and these facts all frigging day. Motherwell have recruited really well. Motherwell pretty much rebuilt their whole team. And if the recruitment model is even half decent, then you're looking at maybe three or four players who are going to exceed expectations. And that makes you a better team automatically, almost automatically. They've got one exceptional talent and the guy who's scoring a lot of goals for them. And they were able to do it because they sold the young guy, sorry. My brain
Lennon Miller.
Sold Lennon Miller for £4.3 million. Right. But this guy's career outside Scotland, and remember, we're only talking about three quarters of the season here. We're not talking about a sustained Motherwell finishing fourth, Motherwell finishing fourth, Motherwell finishing third, Motherwell over a period of time. We're not talking about compressed into this wee tiny campaign, which is weird in so many other ways. His highest honour in the game is winning the Faroese League. The Faroese League, okay? This is an appointment that makes the Ronnie Dyla appointment look like a masterstroke. Wilfred Nancy was better qualified to be Celtic manager than this guy is. It scares the shit out of me how many people are talking about this like it's a serious proposition. There is nothing in this guy's backstory to indicate that he is capable of handling the pressure and the expectation level of working at a club like Celtic and having to do a rebuild of the whole squad. Nothing whatsoever. And if this is the level we're aiming at, because the guys had a reasonably good season at Murrow, then we are in deeper shit than I thought.
I think we are, James. I just do not see anyone capable coming into Celtic. So having someone that's got a year's experience in Scotland is a hell of an advantage compared to Wilfred Nancy. But is there any more on that you want to say, James?
No, I mean, the fact that this is being discussed seriously, right? I want people to stop and think about what they're actually suggesting here. You are offering an alibi to our board of directors to hire Motherwell's manager, the guy whose sole career title was won in the Faroe Islands. The Faroe Islands, right? This is the alibi you're offering our board of directors if they go in and hire this guy. Oh, the clamour for it among the fans was overwhelming. The clamour for it among a certain sect of the media and the fans is overwhelming. But the rest is, I think, they're scared shitless by this idea.
Yeah, well, I can see a lot of what you're saying, but it's chicken and egg. It's catch 22. When you've got Michael Nicholson sitting there giggling away and taking $800,000 a year, and Dermot Desmond, we are not getting anyone of any calibre. So, in the current circumstances,
I said the Motherwell manager was a clown. I said that he's staggeringly unqualified to be Celtic manager. Staggeringly unqualified. If you're happy with the idea of us hiring Motherwell's manager to do a full-scale rebuild over the summer, the guy whose greatest career achievement, and I never said that he had only managed in the Faroese League. I said his only honours came in the Faroese League. Then I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. You've been gaslit to the point where you accept anything.
Finish this section. James, what sort of manager do you think Celtic will attract at the end of this season?
Terrified to think about it, mate. Terrified to think about it. And right. One of the most genuine scary things about that piece I wrote this morning is that if we finish third or fourth and we're playing in the Conference League, there isn't a single player of any calibre or quality who's going to want to stay here, and there isn't a single player of any calibre or quality who's going to want to come here. That doesn't even take into account the financial consequences, which are going to be momentous. That they are structural change consequences. They will hamper our ability to do a rebuild of any significant sort. They'll make it virtually impossible to attract a decent manager or decent players. And if we fail to win the league again next season, the Conference League is the best we can hope for, because that's the prize for finishing second. This is a major, major disaster we're looking at here. And anybody who thinks that the current Motherwell manager is a guy who see us through that, I don't know what to say to them. We're in big trouble.
Right. Switching to a hobby horse of Eric's, weekend referees. The performance between the 70th and 75th minute at Celtic Park yesterday from Matthew McDermott and Grant Irvine, a PE teacher at Beauclair Academy, the school for the Murray Park Starlets, on VAR was appalling. So there is zero consistency when you send off Austin Trusty for something happening at a corner and you don't award Celtic a penalty. So that was one incident amongst many. As usual with all our emerging referees from the Willie Collum School of Refereeing, Matthew McDermott brilliantly positioned himself to get in the way of all Celtic attacking moves. Celtic are pretty pedestrian, pretty slow, but when you've got a referee just inserting himself in that position in the final third of the park that blocks off one more attacking option, it doesn't make things easier. But Eric, what's your overall thoughts on a couple of issues over the weekend and the rapidly declining standard of refereeing? Well, Willie Collum and his good mate from Radio Clyde, who on Sky Sports once a month, spend 25 minutes gaslighting you, telling you everything's great, black is white and white is black.
I think we're witnessing, without doubt, one of the worst seasons that I've seen when it comes to refereeing decisions, because some of the decisions are inexplicable. I mean, I'll refer back to that one at Motherwell or at St Mirren on Saturday evening. That Callum Slattery decision was just farcical. I mean, when you have a player who was being fouled, which Richard King was clearly being fouled by Callum Slattery, and he just tries to break free from the player that's holding onto him and won't let him go. And his momentum carries him around, where he doesn't even make contact with Callum Slattery, and Slattery falls to the deck. I mean, that's the ultimate shithousery from Callum Slattery. And lying there for, I'd say it was a good 30 seconds after the incident on the ground, as if he'd been absolutely poleaxed by Richard King, was ridiculous. How nobody inside in the VAR room looked at that and did not call back the referee, Callum Scott, and say, book him for simulation and rescind that red card. Because that's all it was. It was simulation from Callum Slattery. There was no contact made, and it was ridiculous. We then go on to the game at Celtic Park yesterday, and you have again an incident similar to that where Austin Trusty is being held onto by Jamie McGrath, and Jamie McGrath milks the living shit out of it as well. What did for Austin Trusty was the force with which he hit his arm away. It was the aggression in his actions that did for him. And I don't think we can argue too much about that, but like you said, Matthew McDermott did everything he could to disrupt the play. It was all very stop-start. And for once, I'll say, like, the consistency in the Livingston game as well, where the Ibrox side were playing, if Montana was to be sent off, then equally, Cammy Kerr should have been sent off. I'm never an advocate for the Ibrox side or anything, or giving them anything, but if there's going to be consistency in decisions, it was a very similar situation to what Montano did with JD Gassama, as to the what Cammy Kerr did with Mikey Moore. But yet, that wasn't deemed to be even a free kick. So, like, it shouldn't have been a penalty anyway. We know that, but it should have been a free kick and possibly another sending off. And that's what I'm saying, the consistency. Like, and I honestly, look, I'm baffled as to why Dickinson didn't jump on that one, considering we know where his leanings are, and how it was left go. But, like, there is no consistency in decision-making at the moment. And I wrote a piece this evening where I said that these guys are going to have massive influence in the direction of this title or where this title goes. And sooner or later, and it could happen over the next 2 weeks, you're going to have a decision which will have a huge bearing on the outcome of the title. One of these decisions that will make such a difference that it will have a huge bearing on this title race. And the fact that, like you said, Willie Collum has his show and he comes on and he defends decisions. Like, I mean, we saw recently the audio was released for the Motherwell, the handball at Ibrox. I think, what was it? Fernandez handled the ball in the box against Motherwell, was it? And
that was a Livingston one. Fernandez was involved.
Oh, the Livingston one. Yeah, sorry, that was Livingston. Yeah, but they released the audio for that.
Unbeaten.
Yeah, and how they kept going over it again and again and again and saying that it wasn't a penalty when it was blatantly obvious it was. But that's the biggest issue with refereeing at the moment. There's just no consistency. The decisions are so all over the place and they don't seem to. Our game is really, really starting to look farcical to people on the outside looking in. Especially, I have no idea what we've got VAR for. I have no idea why we have it. Because it's just not being. It was there to assist the referees, and it's clearly they're not even bothering their arse in a lot of situations to even use it. Like that Callum Slattery incident at against St. Mirren, that was the perfect opportunity for VAR to intervene and say no, that's not a red card. You know, they have how many screens in Clydesdale House to look at to see these things from different angles. And to have looked at that, not even review that situation, that decision, and come back and say that it was simulation. Because that's, to everybody who saw that, that was simulation from Callum Slattery. And he should have been yellow carded for that. And the red card should have been rescinded. But it's without doubt, it is the worst season that I've seen with some of the decisions that we've seen this season of just, or decisions that we've seen this season have just been chronic. And I fear for what's to come down the tracks. I know it's unlikely that Dickinson will get the league game because he was on VAR yesterday. So we probably default to the usual, the old reliable John Beaton. And chances are Dickinson may get the cup game. But I know he's chomping at the bit to get a game involving his favourite team. And I don't know. I think referees could do for us in those two games. It's ominous. So yeah, there was just some inexplicable decisions over the weekend that beggar belief. The final one that I will touch on is the Liam Scales penalty decision. Now, Scales was doing his utmost to try and get into a goal scoring position. He was held onto and he was pulled down. And when it was reviewed, it said up on the VAR screen, incident outside penalty box. Now, can anybody explain to me what the fuck that was about? Because it was inside. It was close to the small square. You know what I mean? It was ridiculously inside the box. So where did they come up with the decision that the incident was outside the box? That clearly was a mistake. Obviously, it had to be a mistake. But to me, that was a penalty. It was a stonewall penalty. He was pulled to the ground, and that was it. Would we have won the game if we'd scored that penalty? I don't know. Would it have changed the outcome of the game? Possibly. But again, there's no point in us crying about these decisions because nobody inside the four walls of Celtic Park is going to do anything about it. And they're just going to keep on taking it, just as they take the mediocrity that they deal out the mediocrity that they're dealing out. They're going to accept mediocrity when it comes to refereeing. And we're in a bad place with this sport. We're in a really, really bad place. People have now, and I've seen it being expressed a lot more lately, especially in comments in my own blogs, where people are saying this is worse than 94. This is far worse than 1994. And I think we've crossed the threshold of 1994 is becoming a walk in the park in comparison to what we're dealing with right now. Because as James quite rightly stated in his article today, the scenarios that lay ahead of us, or that lie ahead of us, if this goes second, third, or fourth, in all scenarios, we're in serious trouble. And the magnitude of the rebuild. When I was reading your article today, James, I kind of thought back to post-COVID and the level of a rebuild that we had post the COVID season. And that was bad enough. But I genuinely don't think that we've ever faced into a rebuild of the magnitude that we're going to face into right now. So, and I have no faith in anybody inside in that boardroom right now being able to facilitate a rebuild such as that. But anyway, I've gone off track a bit. I was talking about refereeing and one of our commenters there also commented on the kick in Kieran Tierney's head, and they tried to justify that as well on the refereeing program, on Willie Collins' refereeing program, why he wasn't sent off. That was a blatant sending off. If Hyun-Jun Yang was sent off for the incident at Hearts when he didn't even make contact in that incident, then how in God's name is it not a red card when Kieran Tierney's nose was broken, which it was? So that's dangerous play.
Yeah, it's great the excuses they come up with that are nowhere near the rule book. So there's a loss of the game. So apparently yesterday, Scales' jersey wasn't pulled for long enough. So is there somewhere in the laws of the game where it's 3 seconds, you're allowed a 3 second pull at somebody's jersey, but if it goes to four, it's a free kick. Absolute nonsense. On the Tierney one, if you get a kick in the face and it's from the top of the boot, then that's fine. So as long as it's not studs in your face, that's fine. So there's none of these things can be justified except when you've got somebody like Gordon Duncan that's pally-wally with Willie Collum and they do this 25-minute whitewash, and you could spend 25 minutes in quite a few games over the course of a month. So we got a month's football to cram into this 25-minute show. So, James, I think we're all in agreement. We can complain. Celtic are very, very happy with all this. They do not do anything. They never complain. They don't ask why are all the referees at our matches from the Glasgow and Lanarkshire area. And without doubt, the officials for the next 2 weeks, next 2 Sundays at Ibrox, will all be from Glasgow and Lanarkshire. They'll all be in Willie Collins' good books, etc., etc. It's just the variables that needs to be sorted out. We know what to expect there. But Turning to another subject, James, and you've been quite passionate on this recently, our interim chairman. So we joked last week that he'd called for unity three times and achieved absolutely nothing. I don't know if he's put out another call tonight for unity. Please let us know in the comments. But the last call for unity was on Friday. So that was Brian Wilson's fourth call for unity. And as we know from different discussions, we're still waiting for the release of the minutes of the meeting between Celtic and the collective last Wednesday. So that sounds quite familiar as they drag their heels and mess about with the, try to get something out. But the last time, it took them a week and they admitted that Michael Nicholson shrugged his shoulders, was asked about club signings. But what is going on with Brian Wilson? You've got a little insight into his political management, all that nonsense, but it looks as if he's just talking away, achieving nothing, box ticking. Look at me, I'm trying to achieve peace. Another two home matches have gone past. The Green Brigade are still suspended. Martin O'Neill's talked about it. Kieran Tierney's talked about it. Various folk have talked about it. There's not another home match until, I think, March the 14th. What's going on with this interim chairman and what are the club playing at?
There's a distinction that I always like to make, right? The distinction between being a good strategist and being a good tactician. Brian Wilson is a good tactician. And it's one of the political skills that Brian Wilson definitely has. And strategy and tactics don't always go hand in hand. I've always said that we don't have a single strategic thinker on our board of directors. Strategy is big picture. Tactics is let's get through the moment. And Brian Wilson is very good, as a lot of politicians are, at getting through it at the moment. There's an analogy about New Labour, which kind of comes to mind. A Labour Party spin doctor called Charlie Whelan, who worked for Gordon Brown, basically rewrote the government's policy on the EU in a pub, talking to two journalists. And that's a true story. The government hadn't decided what its EU policy was. He made one up on the spot. And rather than sack him because he was Brown's guy and Brown wasn't letting him go, the government had to cobble together a compromise and it became Brown's famous five tests before we can enter the Euro. And in order to sell that and make it look as if it had came out of some big, deep discussion, Blair announced in the Commons that there were going to be a series of, you know, sell the Euro roadshows all around Britain where Labour senior figures would go in and tell people what the benefits of joining the Euro were. And about a month later, one of the senior down the street aides asked another one, when are we starting the EU roadshows? And the guy laughed at him and said, did you fucking actually believe we were going to do that? We were never intended to do any of that. And that's what our current chairman is doing right now. He's selling bullshit, basically. He's buying time. And that's really all these people are interested in. They're trying to get through the next headline cycle, the next phase of the crisis, the next set of protests, whatever it is. Unfortunately for them, there are 11 games left. And whatever strategy they try to run out the clock, those 11 games are going to determine our future as a club in the short to medium term and their immediate futures as custodians of this club. Everybody who's having a go at the collective right now, and there are very, very many of them out there, everybody who's having a go at collective individual members out there without having a clue about context or anything else, you guys are going to be confronted with a very serious decision. You're either going to have to get on board or keep your heads and keep your mouth shut while the rest of us try and save this club from itself. That's the situation we're going to be in. Come the end of this season, you're either going to be part of the movement or you're going to be one of the guys who, 5 years from now, when our club is completely rebuilt and completely restructured and modernised and in a better place than it's ever been, you've got to be one of the people trying to convince everybody that it was because you kept the faith. You can lie to yourself and tell yourself any fairy tale you want. It's got to be because people did the hard graft in the here and now and ate a bunch of shit for it in the here and now. And that won't be you. We are in a bad place right now and the people running our club don't have the first clue how we're getting out of it. Don't buy any of it. They don't know what they're doing. The three of us have slightly different perspectives, right? And we have slightly different views on individual matters and individual incidents or whatever else, right? But the one thing that unites the three of us absolutely and categorically is that we've been singing the same song, not just for months, for years. Years. The Celtic's on-field success disguised massive structural problems. A bunch of stuff that was going to be waiting to ambush us at some point down the line. Now, I think all 3 years thought that it was going to come in the summer because we assumed that Rodgers would stay for the extra year. We assumed wrongly that the board would have to give Rodgers whatever he needed in the January, in the summer transfer window, in order that we were in the best possible position to win the title. And they didn't. They settled instead for trying to force Rodgers out the door by denying him and therefore the club anything and everything it needed. So we misjudged it, and the crisis came a year earlier than we thought. But none of the three of us ever doubted that this was going to happen. None of us ever doubted we would be in a bad place. This is a much worse place than we thought because it came in the middle of the season. But here we are. And it's no surprise to any three of us because we've all been saying for a while that this was on the cards and it was in the post. We're really, and the fact that we've now got a politician in the chairman's job who is basically trying to buy time tells you that these people have no intention of changing a single thing about the way they do things. The underlying strategy will remain the same. The underlying policies will remain the same. They even boast about how they've been running the club this way for 25 years. Whereas an executive that knew what it was doing would actually say, is it a good idea to run things for 25 years in the exact same way? In an industry that's changing every single day. We're about to find out what these people have in the locker, what their imagination looks like. And I'm dreading the answer. I'm dreading the answer. I've been dreading it for a while. I didn't expect us to be here this early. But yeah, Wilson's good at tactics, but strategy is what's going to make the difference here. And he does not have a strategic thought in his head, and none of them do. They don't know how they're getting us out of this. And they've left us at the mercy of events. January transfer window, right? I said in the piece today, and a couple of people said to me, do you really believe that, right? I said in the piece today that somebody at Celtic Park would have wargamed all of this in January. A pre-January, they would have looked at the situation we're in, they'd have looked at the league table, they'd have looked at the potential consequences of a second and third place finish and said, how do we avoid this? Well, what do we do to avoid this, right? And it was perfectly clear that we could be in this place. I mean, we've been third for weeks and weeks and months, and it was perfectly clear that we could be here or in a place just like this. And instead of fortifying this club for that challenge, they spent January fucking around. They spent January relying on Martin O'Neill getting us through games and then flung him a bunch of loaney signings, which only makes the summer rebuild much bigger and much harder. The idea that these people have got any kind of answer, the proof of it is lying just behind us. They knew what was at stake. They knew what they had to do. And they didn't do any of it. I mean, it's not just that they didn't do some of it. They didn't do any of it. It's amateur hour. This is what happens when you run your football club like a tin pot regional bowling club and you staff it with your pals and your cronies. It's absolutely clueless. Honestly, I genuinely think that there is a section of your fan base that's walking about with the blinkers on and they have no idea how much trouble we are potentially in. And it may even be that this gamble pays off, but as I've said before, when you're gambling to this extent, is that really something that we can allow these people to continue to do? Because as I've said prior to this, it's like if your significant other came home and said, I took the mortgage to Vegas and I bet everything on black and we won, so well done. Would you welcome them back with open arms? No, you would throw their shit in the street and you would tell them to beat it forever, putting you in jeopardy like that. On a simple king 50-50 bet, and this board took a much bigger gamble with our club than that in January. We really are in a bad spot.
Yep, yeah, there's some big, big decisions coming for the Celtic board, our so-called custodians, and also for supporters. So I don't know many supporters that have enjoyed anything this. I'll be one or two matches, League Cup semi-final, but that was soon slapped back when you reach the final. There's been very few highlights, and fairly soon we're going to be asked to renew season tickets. So that's going to be a big issue for the collective to deal with. They don't demand boycotts. They recommend and they invite. And folk need to start thinking about season tickets now. What enjoyment have you had for your £700-£800? There's no, as no matter what happens, I don't think there's going to be more than 50,000 at any of the home matches leading up to the split. The Glasgow Derby and the game against Hearts might attract big crowds after it, but you look around at Celtic Park and there's plenty of seats there, and that's with season ticket holders. So if you want to give up your season ticket, you're not giving up in Celtic. You can still go to matches game by game, and the club need to earn your £30-£35. So there's loads and loads to go through, and the next fortnight, again, that'll decide for a lot of people what direction they're going to take it in. No doubt the vast majority will renew their season ticket, and they'll look at themselves as being martyrs to some extent because of such great supporters. But there will be a significant number of folks say, I've had enough of this. I'm not putting up with this. I've had no enjoyment from this. It's taken up too much of my time. I mean, the guys that come from Ireland, the dedication that they show is incredible. And again, on the season ticket, you maybe get a bit... In Scotland, they like to squeeze in too many fixtures in December and January. So on your 18-match season, 19, I'll get my arithmetic right, 38 divided by 2 is definitely 19. So for your 19 matches, you're maybe looking at 5 or 6 of them in December and January, possibly midweek matches. So there's decisions for folk to make. But Eric, how do you see things with Brian Wilson, the collective, and it's not quite a time bomb, but things can't continue as they are. We're not going to have 50,000 season ticket holders all expecting the earth during the summer and a major rebuild while the same people are in charge. Whatever money Celtic bring in, the current Celtic board will spend less, and they won't spend it very wisely. We've seen the summer signings, Tunepke's up and down, but over the piece he's contributing something. Negren's good, but Balak Wisha is horrific, and there's no club that can get away with that. 18 months, 2 years scouting of him. Yamada and Inamura have come and gone. James, you want to come in, or are you waving to someone?
I just want one wee second.
Yep.
Just one wee second before Eric comes in. This is as screwed up as this season's been. I can't think of a more screwed up way to put it than this. If we win the next two games, it's no impossible for us to be sitting top of the league next Wednesday night. Right, that's how screwed up this is. But let's be brutally honest, because this could go to the last weeks, the last day, before we know how this league table is going to look, right? But let's be brutally honest. Long before it is mathematically over, we will know when it's over. Long before it. It will be finished long before it's mathematically impossible. And at that point, you will probably see the kind of protests we've not seen at Celtic since the 90s. And you'll probably see boycotts the level of which we've not seen since the 90s. The really interesting thing is that season ticket forms are going to be hitting people's doorsteps at exactly the same time as that's taking place, if we don't pull this off. And I don't know what season ticket numbers are going to look like, but I can tell you this. If we're playing third tier European football next season in the Conference League, they're going to have to shut more than just the top tier of the stands.
Eric, how do you see things with the various moving parts? Unfortunately, the board aren't moving. There's no sign of life there. It's 4 months on since Brendan Rodgers left. Interim chairman, interim manager, loan players. Somebody says we're an interim football club just now. Is there any clarity that you can offer? Can you see a positive way ahead in the coming months, or is it going to be worse before it gets better?
I think the word that describes our club at the moment is a club in stasis. that's we're just in stasis. We're going nowhere. If anything, we're going backwards, which is becoming more and more evident in the last few weeks. We're 4 months on from Brendan Rodgers leaving, and things, as you've kind quite rightly pointed out, have got a hell of a lot worse. Brian Wilson is pissed. He's just full of piss and wind, as far as I'm concerned. He does an awful lot of talking. He likes to talk, obviously, which leads to absolutely nothing. You know, Peter Lawwell, as chairman, didn't say much. He might have said a bit more than Michael Nicholson, which wouldn't be hard, but he didn't say much. Brian Wilson hasn't shut up since he got in the door. But it's all, as I said, piss and wind. It's gaslighting. It's panic, which it was in the last statement, because that was totally down to panic. That was a very panic statement, and that was based on the fact that they realize that the protests are hurting them. They're not. That tennis ball protest against Stuttgart didn't have any bearing on the outcome of the game. It stopped the game for 3 minutes. It had no outcome on the outcome, you know, or it had no bearing on the outcome of that game. But the optics are starting to scare the likes of Wilson now. And the fact that the world media is starting to sit up and look at what's going on in Celtic, and I think that was highlighted by the banner from the Stuttgart fans, you know, in solidarity with the Green Brigade. I think that kind of stood out, and people are starting to ask the question, is why are another group of ultras asking for the home ultras to be allowed into their own stadium? You know, so it's a ridiculous situation. It's just a totally farcical, ridiculous situation at Celtic Park at the moment. But the future, the only way that things start to come right at Celtic is when these people leave. Now, I don't know at this point in time what it's going to take to get them to fall on their sword and resign and just do the honourable thing and leave. But I can tell you this much. If we lose the next three fixtures, let's just say, we look at the worst case scenario, right? We lose at Ibrox, we lose at Pataudry, and we lose at Ibrox again. Hell hath no fucking fury when it comes to what these guys are going to face. Because we saw the reaction when we lost in the derby at the turn of the year. That resulted in Nancy and Tisdale going. We saw the reaction from the fans. We saw how pissed off the fans were. There's nothing pisses Celtic fans off more than losing to the Ibrox side. If we lose to them in two consecutive weekends, all hell is going to break loose. It really is. This board isn't going to know what has hit them when that happens, or if that happens, should I say. I'm not saying when that happens, because it's an if. But that to me, I believe, if it does happen, should be the catalyst to really, really turning the screw on these guys. But the future is bleak at the moment. There is no direction. There's no strategy. Nobody seems to have a clue of how to get out of this mess. The only thing that is on the people involved in our board at the moment is self-preservation. They're only out for their own skins. They're only out to ride the gravy. They want to continue riding this gravy train. Then none of them want to lose the gravy train that Celtic is for them. And they're putting themselves before the club. And we've discussed this time out a number on this podcast that this is what they do. They've consistently put themselves before the club. And it appears to me that, you know, what's ground zero? But for these guys, there is no ground zero. They just won't give up unless they are forced. And really, you know, the pressure is really put on them. But we saw how angry fans got at the turn of the year, at the derby game at the turn of the year. Like I said, the protests are just going to get ramped up to a ferocious level if we hit the worst-case scenario over the next three games. Nobody gives a shit about Stuttgart. If he puts out a B team, you know, for that. And, you know, the thing is, they're going out there without any pressure anyway, so they could come away with a 1-2-0 win. You never know, because they're under no pressure to win the game. The pressure is off. But the pressure is on the guys who have to go to Ibrox and Pataudry and then Ibrox again. And like I said earlier on, we need our strikers to start actually fucking scoring goals if we want to have any hope of winning at Ibrox. We cannot keep relying on Benjamin Negrin, because Negrin is a part of the midfield, but he isn't effective in midfield. He's a goal poacher, but he's not effective. He doesn't put that level of steel that we need into the midfield. I thought that the Ox was okay yesterday. I mean, he was solid, but he only got 60 minutes. I think he probably maybe would have been better bringing him on later in the game, where he would have maybe had a better influence. But this is the cards that Martin O'Neill has been dealt. It's the way he has to try and rotate things because of the deficiencies in the squad that he has. It's like I said today, you know, there's a lot of players in that squad that aren't fit to wear a Celtic jersey. And that's not their fault. It's not their fault. They were brought in here by people who aren't fit to, you know, be custodians of Celtic. So it isn't their fault that they're not a good fit for this club. Because the guys who brought them in are just not fucking able to get players in of a decent caliber. But I don't know. I've never seen a future. I knew after the COVID season that things looked bleak, and that we, you know, the media had painted it that we, you know, we were going to be lucky if we finished third or fourth that season when Ange came in. But we all know we looked into the whole Ange appointment, and that all turned out very well and rosy in the garden. There is no. That boat sailed a long time ago. We're not going to luck into a good manager who can turn all this around and perform a rebuild like Ange Postecoglou did. That was a one in a fucking million instance of something like that happening. It's not going. Lightning won't strike twice in this situation. So, like James, commenters were saying earlier on, who are we going to get in as manager? I can't see anybody who's going to, and I can't see any serious manager who's going to come to Celtic under the current regime. There's no serious manager out there who's going to look at things that are going on at Celtic at the moment and say to himself, I want to be a part of that. Who the fuck would want to be a part of this? Like, who would want to step into the shit show that is Celtic right now?
Eric, no, what makes it worse, mate? It's not even the scale of the rebuild or the fact that it'll be done with decreased resources if we don't qualify, if we don't finish first and qualify for the Champions League, or at least stand a good chance of getting in there. It's not even that element of it that's going to deter people. And it's got nothing to do with Scottish football, and it's got nothing to do with the standard of the league. The thing that is going to deter a lot of top-class managers is watching what happened to Rodgers and knowing that not even success is going to save you if these people decide to fuck you. Doesn't matter what service you render, doesn't matter what success you deliver, if these people don't decide one day they just don't fucking like you, you're going to get stabbed in the back and thrown out the door. And your past record won't save you. And, mate, that is toxic.
Yep. As James, it's not stabbed in the back. It's stabbed in the front. And any credible manager that gets approached by Celtic or their agent is discussing Celtic, they will make a phone call to Brendan Rodgers. So whatever spin is put on the Celtic proposal, a phone call will go into Saudi Arabia. Brendan Rodgers will say, ask him about X, Y, and Z, and we'll see what they come up with. But Eric was suggesting we might lose successive games to Ibrox and Aberdeen. We could, of course, win both games at Ibrox, and it won't change the slightest thing about Celtic. I'll just postpone the inevitable. It'll be joyful. It'll be reasons to celebrate. It'll be great fun. It'll be some laugh, but it doesn't really change anything. It'll buy a little time, but whatever happens at Ibrox on next Sunday, the 1st and the 8th of March, it doesn't change anything on the state of Celtic. It might accelerate things, but winning against that lot doesn't suddenly mean that Celtic are competent, ambitious and forward-thinking. So, James, it's prediction time. I think we can all guess what's... We're going out against Stuttgart on Thursday, another year without a knockout success in Europe. 2004. Yep, season 2003-2004. We beat Teplice, we beat Barcelona, and there's been nothing since. So what do you reckon the scoreline will be in Stuttgart? And I'll be sitting in the fence and optimistically, glass half full, I'll take a one each at Ibrox. But how do you see these two games going, James?
This is the first year in, I think, since the COVID season that I didn't go abroad for a European game. because I usually love it. It's one of the best things that I've ever done as a fan. It's traveling abroad to watch the team and meeting all those great Celtic fans everywhere and chatting about people about their backgrounds and where they're from and how they. My apathy towards this competition has been constant since the start. I'm all man and a bunch of the boys after bus are actually going through by on a minibus on Wednesday morning. And they're going to stay till Friday, I think, or Saturday. And then we're all going to go and watch a game in the Ibrox game in the pub. And it's those guys I want to see the team put on a show for. But I know that they shouldn't put on a show. I know that it's detrimental to the chances of getting a result at Ibrox. But for the guys, I would like to see us at least put in an effort and try and get something out of it. But for my own feelings about it, I think I'm past the point of being apathetic about it and just want it out of the way. Because it's not even a distraction. It's just a pain in the arse. If O'Neill fields even 5 first-team regulars, I'll be shocked. And I will wonder if our manager has taken leave of his senses. We will lose. Of course we will lose, because nobody's running through Watts to win that game. Nobody should be. I would hate to think O'Neill would ask anybody. Ibrox, do you know something? I couldn't even tell you what will happen at Ibrox. I don't even have a prediction for that one, because they're dreadful and we are just as dreadful. And what I come back to in here again is that this league's not going to be won because one team was brilliant. All three real contenders are terrible. Motherwell are probably the best football team out of the 40s. This league will be won by the team that literally falls over the line. The team that makes the least horrendous screw-ups. Because the idea that I keep hearing the idea that if we go to Ibrox and lose, the league's over. That's miles from the truth. They've dropped points in 2 of the last 3 games against Motherwell and against Livingston. Livingston, the bottom team in the league, came within an AC winning there for the first. You've beaten them for the first time in God knows how many decades. And I genuinely don't see what the great strength of that club and that team is. They'll drop loads of points before the season ends. Hearts will drop loads of points before the season ends. So will we. And I could not tell you which version of us will turn up at the weekend. I know that if we turn up and we play decent football and we play with even a bit more intensity and a bit more pace, that we've got a chance of really, really ending their season in the next fortnight. But I don't trust that version of us will show up. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. There is a certain idea doing the rounds right now, right? And I did say I was going to have a rant about this, so if you guys will indulge me for 5 minutes, I'm going to have it just now. This season has fundamentally changed my relationship with Celtic. And I think that a lot of us are going to say the same thing. I think a lot of you feel the same thing. And I'm just going to try and articulate what it means to me. I've never seen a Celtic board of directors act the way the one we have right now did in the summer. Never seen it. I knew that next summer was going to be bad because Rodgers wouldn't be there. I didn't expect him to treat Rodgers like shit. I didn't expect him to deny him his players and deprive him of his opportunity to put his own stamp on the team and leave an inheritance for his successor. I didn't expect that. I never thought I would see a Celtic board deliberately sabotaging the team just to get rid of the manager. Never thought I would see anything like it. And I said in the summer that everything changed in the summer. It was a crossing of the Rubicon moment that these people had done something so egregious there was never going to be any redemption for them again. They had forfeited a right to sit in the boardroom and they had forfeited a right to lead the club. And I think a lot of us came to the same conclusion at the same time, and suddenly the collective is born, right? Now, I always assumed that if the day ever came when Celtic were in a mess of this magnitude, that it would be obvious to everybody and that the fans would all come together and we would work to prevent it getting any worse and to change the leadership at the top of the house and that we would all be laser focused on that single idea. And I don't see any evidence that that is true. The collective, in fact, is being undermined by supporters at every level of your support. At every level. The people on the collective are having their personal lives questioned and their personal decisions questioned. I have read some of the most venomous, disgusting stuff online against Celtic fans that I've ever read in my entire life in the past 4 months from fellow Celtic fans. And that has changed my relationship with this club forever. There are sections of your support that I will never reconcile myself to ever again. Ever again. People telling me that I am not a Celtic supporter because I'm in favour of a boycott. People telling my old man, who didn't even boycott in the 90s, that he's not a Celtic supporter because he didn't because he supported a boycott. You can all go and fuck off, every one of you. If you think you're better than me, that you're a better Celtic fan than me, because I care enough about the club to fight for what's good for it. If you think that I'm doing this for hits or clicks or attention, you're an even bigger fucking moron, because you don't fundamentally understand what it is you're talking about. My relationship with a large section of your support will never be the same as it was ever again, because you're every bit as ignorant, you're every bit as stupid, you're every bit as fundamentalist and small-minded in your own way as the fans at Ibrox who let their club die. And I never thought I would say that about some of your fans. I never thought I would say it. But that's what you are. Sorry about that.
No, no, don't apologise. That's genuine. No, the Celtic relationship is always evolving, and anyone that judges other people, and you're an A-band supporter, you're a B-band supporter, or you're just a D or an E, nonsense. Everybody supports Celtic in a different ways. You get different decisions, there's different dynamics involved. So let it be, let it be. We all do the right thing. We all do the thing we feel most comfortable with. But switch it. So I'll go for a 2-0 defeat on Thursday and an optimistic 1-1 or nothing each at Ibrox on Sunday. And I would gladly take a game as utterly awful as the game at the start of the season, Russell Martin's only Glasgow derby. It was a horrific game of football. It was utter murder. And if the same happens, if we get 90 minutes of Walter Smith anti-football on Sunday at Ibrox, all well and good, because the other scenario is too painful. Eric, how do you see these two games? When I don't think there's any Celtic supporters looking forward to any matches these days. The next two don't appeal at all. How do you see them tumbling out?
Before I say that, I just want to kind of make some comments on what James said. At the top of this show, before we came live, myself and James were having a little bit of a discussion there before you came on, Joe. One of the things that we said was that for years now, and I'm only blogging coming up 5 years now. You guys are at this a lot longer than I am, all right? But for the 5 years that I've been doing it, I have from day one called out the shit show and predicted the shit show, just as you guys have, that we find ourselves in right now. And James made a very valid point at the top of the show where he said, soon enough, we three anyway, especially, will all be vindicated for everything that we have said down through the years about what is going on at Celtic at the moment. And none of us wants to be vindicated.
Never wanted
for the reasons that we will be vindicated. We all want the best for Celtic. That is all we want. We all want this club to be the best that it can be. And that's the day will come where I believe it's not too far off. The day will come where we can write about a Celtic that is the best that it can possibly be.
Yeah, I won't.
But for this moment in time, and I echo exactly what James has said. I have had people come onto my blog and absolutely insult me to the core with things that they've said, calling me every fucking name under the sun, telling me I'm not a true Celtic fan. Like, I've been supporting this club now for 43 years. And it's a massive part of my life. And for people to tell me that I'm not a Celtic fan, because I care, and I care deeply about this club, and I care deeply about the fucking horrible direction that this club is going in at the moment, is an insult to me, and it insults me to my core. But I'll continue fighting, and I will continue writing, and I will continue calling this shit out as I see it, the same as you two guys will. And we'll never stop, and we'll never be silenced. Because we called this a long, long time ago. We knew this was coming down the tracks. People called us bedwetters and fucking... Look, I'm not going to go into all the names that I was called. But we were all called... Yeah, we were all called a lot of fucking names. But we're right.
Bloggers with agendas, wasn't it, Joe?
Yeah, we're right. And we have been proven right.
Bloggers should have agendas. You don't just blow with the wind.
Yeah. So, look... We'll be vindicated. I'm not saying I'll be happy about the vindication, but we will be vindicated. And as I say, you know, I suppose in this kind of, you know, line of work, what we're doing, you have to take the rough with the smooth. We have to be thick-skinned. We have to take the abuse that comes our way, but it doesn't deter us from writing what we write. So on that note, I'll move on to my predictions. We're talking about the Stuttgart game first, I reckon. Look, I don't care. That's my honest answer there. I really don't care. If we come away with a 1-1 draw, I'd be happy. If we're beaten, I don't care. I just don't care. With regards to the game at Ibrox, it'll be close. It'll be very close. And a lot of it will hinge on the refereeing decisions maybe that happen in that game. But as you said, Joe, if we get a shitty fucking 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw, I'll take it. And, like, I hate the fact that I have to say shit like that. You know, that I'm reduced to that now, where I have to say, you know, I'd be happy if we snatch a draw. Like, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when Ange Postecoglou was in charge of the club, we were gunning for these fuckers. You know, we were like, oh, yeah, we're going to go there and we're going to hammer them, you know. And we can't even... Like, this board has taken away that level of enjoyment that we can't even look forward to a game against a shit Ibrox side. Because let's be honest about it. This is a side that can't even beat Livingston, the bottom of the table, you know? And we're, you know, we're saying we'll be happy with a 1-1 draw against this side. And that is what we have been reduced to now by this board. Now, the likes of Brian Wilson coming out with his fucking shit every week, talking bollocks and delivering nothing. Look, we could go on all night long about these guys. There's no point. I think at this point in time, we just have to take it game by game. That's all we can do.
The roller coaster, mate. We're strapped in. There's literally nothing we can do to enjoy or not the ride in front of us. There's literally no impact we can have now. The club itself that can't even have an impact now. The chance to change the trajectory was in January and they could not be asked. And you know what the really screwed up thing about this is? This is literally for all the marbles. This season is literally for all the marbles. This is the zero-sum season. Because every single thing that I wrote, right, I've written two of the most comprehensive pieces in the last 2 days that I've ever written in the history of the blog. First one's called Empire's Fall, Part 2, which was... the day before yesterday, and yesterday and this morning was on the consequences for our club if we finish second, third, fourth. Everything that's in the Empire's Fall piece and everything that's in that other piece will be replicated exactly at Ibrox, only 10 times worse if they finish third or fourth, right? So when I say this is for all the marbles, I mean it. Third place finish for either one of the Glasgow clubs is almost a year zero event. If it happens across there rather than here, then it is a year zero event because they're already in significant trouble. Our financial sustainability regulations, and this will absolutely tip them over the edge into really serious problems. And short of a major downsizing of what they have at the club right now, they will be courting absolute disaster. And so the fact that our board hasn't even been able to spot that and take advantage of it and fully prepare us for winning this title, which might be the most important and that we've seen in our generation. I'm gobsmacked. Gobsmacked.
Right, that's us on 75 minutes of fun and merriment. So I was going to say bugger off, but I don't usually say words like that. But
it's all right, Joe. You can say it.
That's enough for this week. If you haven't subscribed already, please subscribe and click on the notifications, and you'll find out when we'll be sharing more fun and banter. Generally, it's 6:30 every Monday. So if you've enjoyed it or whatever, please come back and leave a comment. If you're not watching it live, leave a comment. Give us a thumbs up. All that sort of stuff. It all helps. And, yep, enjoy your week, folk. I'm sure you'll have lots of fun. So that's enough from us three. I'll leave that blank. Let folk make up their own mind. That's all from us three, the Trinity Tims. See you all again next week.
Talk to you next week, guys, and hopefully we'll be celebrating a draw at Ibrox. That's what we celebrate these days, guys. Good luck.